check in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are in the Allstate Showcase studio, sitting right along Michigan Avenue. I'll tell you one guy who's smiling today. It's Cornelius Griggs. Cornelius is the man behind CME Construction and, of course, GMA Construction. I'm sorry, I don't know what I'm thinking. And Cornelius won yesterday the James Tyree Award from the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. I don't know if you knew. I was at their pitch event, emceed that. And then we had each of the three finalists on over the past month or so. Cornelius yesterday won the $50,000, so he's going to come in. He's got a great story.
I hope I'll meet him on my way out, but I'll tell you, James Tyree was one of Chicago's great businessmen, entrepreneurs, and an all-around terrific human being.
And a contributor to journalism in the city.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he did it all. And so good for Cornelius. He's a guy who really built himself up, and now a big part of his mission in this construction company is to find others who need that and to help them too. So Terry Savage is here. You just heard a voice, terrysavage.com. And well, she's worried about your investments and your mutual funds and who you're paying to help look over those.
Stick around, folks. I've got two different subjects to rant on today, and they both come very near and dear to my heart.
Is this a problem with the lack of the fiduciary rule, or tell me about this?
Yeah. You know that we've talked for a long time about the fact that brokers and salespeople, they call themselves advisors sometimes, are not obligated to fully disclose all fees and commissions or put your interests ahead of their own. And the Labor Department created this fiduciary rule when the SEC wouldn't get around to it a couple of years ago, and then the new administration promptly dumped that. And it triggered me on this whole path about who is looking out for individual investors. That's been my goal all my life. And all of a sudden, I realized that, you know how many years I've said, oh, that's all right, just go to Fidelity.com, Vanguard.com, TRowePrice.com, AmericanCentury.com, and buy a mutual fund, open up your IRA, or so forth. Now, I have come to see what a great amount of excess fees are charged. I always knew brokers charged a fee for their services. When the fiduciary rule discussion happened, many brokerage firms said, well, we'll just charge a 1% annual management fee, which I thought was excessive. But here's how Wall Street was built. On a ton of fees that, taken out of your mutual funds that they sold you, have cost you as an investor a fortune. Not just the fees themselves, but the lost earnings on those fees. So I have a new column up at terrysavage.com detailing exactly how you pay fees you don't know or understand, and how much that they cost you, and how to figure out what to do about
it. Okay, I want you to differentiate for me the difference between stockbrokers, though, and you also write about registered investment advisors.
Okay, registered investment advisor is a designation with the SEC, and they are required, and some of them charge commissions, some of them charge fees, but they live by the fiduciary standard that says they must fully disclose all fees and costs and put your interests ahead of their own. So if they're trying to sell you a very expensive fund or win a trip to Hawaii or whatever it is, they have to fully disclose that.
So those are the people who, if you go sit down and talk about a retirement plan and things like that.
Exactly. Okay. And you can go to CFP, Certified Financial Planner, CFPBoard.org, or FeeOnly.org, which is the Association of the Fee-Only Financial Planners. Brokers, whatever they call themselves, whether they sit inside a bank and they're in the brokerage division of a bank, whether they're your stockbroker, let me, before I get everybody riled up, I've already gotten the SEC riled up with this column, they contacted me, but before I get everybody riled up, there are a lot of wonderful, honest brokers out there. I know that's how I started in my career. But some brokers deliberately put clients into the same mutual fund, but in a class of shares that is designed to provide ongoing and expensive fees for the broker. Well, let me give you an example. And the one in my column, we're not talking, by the way, about trash mutual funds. For my example, I took a wonderful fund, the Fidelity Large Cap Fund. It's a great fund. Mm-hmm. It's averaged over 8% a year for 20 years. And if you went to Fidelity.com or 1-800-FIDELITY and opened your IRA there or rolled over, this is where you get a lot of money now. Everybody's retiring with more than they thought, $292,000 in my IRA rollover. And all the industry is standing out there saying, we'll tell you what to do. And they'll charge you these big fees. But if you called Fidelity or Vanguard or any of these funds that you call directly, they would put you in and you would have very low ongoing annual fees. In the case of the Fidelity Large Cap, you'd pay 0.62, a little bit more than 0.5% a year. All in, that's all the fees to keep your account in this fund. But if you went to a broker who sold you the same shares, I'm talking about the same exact fund, they can charge you up to 5.75% commission. At $100,000, it drops down to 3.5% commission. And the annual fees are 0.91%, 50% more, just because you went through a broker. And that's not the worst of it. There are the C shares. I'll let you get a word in a minute. There are the C shares. There's no upfront commission, but a much higher and ongoing fee of 1.67%. All that money is used to compensate the broker, advisor, salesperson, whatever they call themselves, for selling you the
fund. Okay,
fund.
We need to take a break. But tell me then, what do people do with this information?
I'm going to tell you how to look back. There's a wonderful new website called fiduciaryintegrity.com. For a fee of $99, they will look at your mutual fund. You've been in this fund for 20 years, and they will tell you, hey, well, in this example, someone started with $100,000 in the no-load fund. It became, over 20 years at 8%, $411,000. But in the C shares, with those higher fees, and some have back-end charges for taking money out, they got only $332,000, nearly $80,000 difference, the money taken out and the growth it would have earned.
That's Terry Savage talking about your IRA. Wait till she addresses your Social Security.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Frank Sennett comes along in just a bit, and we'll talk about a big gift for Rush. The money that they are getting will go toward further treatment of former soldiers for PTSD. They've had great success there, so we'll talk to Frank about that. Terry Savage is in the studio, and she's promised that I will get a word in edgewise, but just not right away.
No, I'm not finished on this mutual fund thing.
What's
please?
Up?
I think this is the most significant column I've written in a long time. You know, I'm always looking out for you, and nobody else in the past has been able to quantify the impact of these excessive fees. Let me tell you, they are not illegal because there is no low fiduciary law that says brokers have to do the best job for them. They just have to do a suitable job. And you can't file this. If you go to this website, Fiduciary Integrity, and find out that for the same fund you paid thousands of dollars and lost lots of money you would have earned on the fund in the last 12 years that you've owned it, you cannot file suit against a broker, even if you thought it was egregious, because you signed an arbitration agreement. There is one securities class action lawyer in this town, though, Clint Krislov. Krislov Luck, you ought to have him on, Krislov, who has set up a special division to help fund investors in arbitrations against brokerage firms. But for the future going forward, you need to know that even if it says a wonderful name like Fidelity or Vanguard, you may be buying a class of shares that has very expensive funds. In the column, which is on terrysavage.com now, you can get a link to FINRA's fund analyzer, which will say, oh yeah, it's a great fund, but here's what the A shares cost, here's what the M shares, the C shares. And if you want to check on how much you paid in excess and the impact it's had on your account, go to fiduciaryintegrity.com.
Right,
it does cost $99, but he's created an algorithm that can look at your past investments and tell you how much.
Why in the world would I want to give a guy $100 to find out just how much I've been ripped off?
Well, because I personally think that if enough individuals,
then there'll be movement.
Well, I called the SEC on this, and they said, oh, we have a toll-free number if you think you've been overcharged, but go in and talk to your management of your brokerage firm. Well, I think if you walk in and say, here's the documentation, if I'd been in the no-load or even the lower money cost management class, or even if I'd paid a small fee up front, but you put me in this really loaded up with fees fund, here's how much more I would have had. I think if enough individuals, number one, go in and complain, and number two, don't buy funds that have high fees, even though it's a great fund, then I think maybe we can change Wall Street. The SEC isn't doing this for us.
All right. So there's that. Social Security, all right, I see, is dipping into its reserves. They're opening up the lockbox, Terry.
There is no lockbox. There is no trust fund. And whoever wrote the columns in today's newspapers, I wanted to write them all and say, what do you mean Social Security is tapping into its reserves? The trust fund. Look, back in the early 80s, when we were first in trouble with Social Security, legislation was passed. It raised the Social Security taxes, the payroll taxes, and to build up a, quote, trust fund for when we, me, you, baby boomers, retired.
Mm-hmm.
But 20-some years ago, 25 years ago, the federal government said, look at that pile of money sitting there in the Social Security Trust Fund. Here's what we'll do. We'll count that as a plus on our balance sheet, and we'll combine it with the government spending. So the surpluses have been combined with the government spending deficits. And though this year we'll only have a $500 billion deficit spending, that includes all the pluses in the Social Security Trust Fund. If you open the lockbox, which it does not, or the trust fund, or the shoebox in Maryland, it's stuffed with IOUs from the federal government.
Now, do you find on Wednesdays after you leave here that you're more zen and relaxed? Do you get it out
after
of your system?
After I get this out of my system? The thing I can't stand, I mean, it's been almost 40 years of
this. Yes or no?
I get so upset when I think we Americans, as citizens, as financial consumers, don't have the sophistication to either offset Wall Street or our own government, which these reports.
I think sometimes, you know, Terry, I think it's exhaustion.
Untrue.
It's like, you know, there's so many things to decide now.
I think is instead of sex, Steve, actually.
Okay, we're going to have to take a minute for that. What do you mean?
I mean, I get it. You asked me if I get it out of my system. Yeah, I want you all to know. I don't want you to think that if you're in your 60s, there is not going to be enough money in the Social Security Trust Fund because we have been stealing the money along the way and adding it to our budget deficit. And if you get suddenly you're retiring and you now have an amazing amount because of this bull market in your 401k, you're going to be very careful who you turn that over to invest for you. Yeah, you don't know what to do with $430,000. You don't know how much to withdraw. Don't get blinded by the name of the fund, look into and ask, what is the upfront fees? What are the annual fees? Don't pay a lot of money because you're going to live 20 years and it's going to eat into your money.
All right, we've got
30
seconds left. I want to go back to that. So you're talking about stockbrokers. You're not talking about when you go and sit down with someone.
Yes, even financial advisors, some of them will put you, if they're not registered in investment advisors, and this is the confusion. There's no one title, but if you have a CFP, Certified Financial Planner, who is also a registered investment advisor or a fee-only advisor, you could talk to them. Look, there are plenty of great people who are brokers, but not under the fiduciary standard of the RIA, who have been putting people in low-cost funds. I know some of them. They don't rip you off, but the temptation is there because no one was a broker. And I'm talking about at the biggest firms, even they call themselves advisors. They are not obligated to tell you what the costs are. You have to ask.
Read the column. It's at terrysavage.com.
Absolutely.
Terry, thank you for coming by.
It's been fun.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
It's 12:37 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in. You know, we're talking a lot about moving out of the Showcase Studio in Michigan Avenue, and I appreciate the fact that, I've been coming here since 1984, and I've only got, after today, one more show from the studio. I'll certainly miss it. I have to tell you, I appreciate the kind words from people saying that they're sad and all of that. We're going to a beautiful spot, and we're going to great studios. But I just had a woman walk by, and she stopped by the window and sort of made, you know, the tears in her eyes sort of look that she'll miss walking by every day and seeing us, and I tend to overlook that. I know that that's a routine for a lot of people up and down Michigan Avenue. We certainly will miss them, too. But we're going on to great things. Speaking of great things, Frank Sennett is on a phone line from Crane Chicago Business. Frank, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. And, you know, pretty soon we're going to be neighbors.
I know. We're 303 Wacker, and you're not too far from there, right? Are we Pedway accessible?
Yeah, we're right at Michigan and Randolph, yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Well, we'll have to have a party at the Dunkin' Donuts on the Pedway.
Perfect.
Tell me about Rush, right? I think this was today they announced, or maybe yesterday, this big $45 million award. And it's not just the cash. It looks like they're doing really great things with it.
Yeah, this is a real feel-good story. PTSD has been a huge problem, obviously, for our veterans fighting overseas. And Rush is part of a pilot program from the Wounded Warrior Project. They got $15 million a couple of years ago. And today they announced they're getting their biggest gift ever, $45 million from the Wounded Warrior Project to continue the PTSD treatment, which has shown really phenomenal results, the Wounded Warrior Project has said. So really good job by Rush. Apparently between 90 and 95% of participants are completing Rush's program, compared with a third who finish behavioral health therapies with the VA. So they're seeing a lot of good results there.
And just to explain how difficult it is, even though they've got a great number of people finishing, they've treated under this program 262 vets so far. 60% no longer meet criteria for PTSD, which is great. 60% walk away, you know, with it behind them. But that just shows that this is a successful program, and still a bragging number is only 60%.
It's a real pernicious problem, and you know, to tackle it, they have a very intensive outpatient program, and the participants say the only difference between that and an inpatient program is they don't sleep overnight at the hospital, so it requires a lot of tenacious work, you know, with these folks.
The author, the reporter here, Stephen, is it Strahler?
Yes, yeah, Strahler.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so he talked to one vet with a quote that stuck with me. He said, you know, at Rush, they not only worked on the way I thought, they worked on my spirit and my soul. Which, you know, is a wonderful sort of way to put things. They said at the VA they treat the symptoms. At Rush, in this program, they've been trying to get at the cause and all of that. So, boy, $45 million from the Wounded Warriors, that will certainly help, and I hope they move towards some continued success there.
Absolutely, and there are three other hospitals in the network in Atlanta, Massachusetts, and L.A., so Rush is the first to get that grant renewal, so they're doing something right.
And so there's that, where there's an outside group giving money into a hospital to fund a program that's already existing. At Northwestern University, there's a different sort of partnership, and this is with Deerfield. It's not, I think they're based in Massachusetts, but Northwestern now working on different medications with a $65 million influx of capital. Explain this partnership for me.
Yeah, so this money is coming from an investment management company, and the goal is to, you know, overcome that final mile program, final mile problem that university research facilities sometimes have. They'll develop a new treatment, a new drug, and just have a problem getting it out to patients. So at Northwestern, they have several in the pipeline. They have successfully brought the anti-seizure drug Lyrica to market. It was acquired by Pfizer about 12 years ago, Narex, an antidepressant. So there have been some wins, and it does have some partnerships with Baxter International and AbbVie, but they're looking to have this funding fund trials and bring, you know, some of the drugs they have in development to market. They include medications to treat Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, depression, and several types of cancers, and they need major funding to get to that clinical trial phase.
And this $65 million, I mean, I'm going to say it's a big check. Obviously, it's a big check, but relatively speaking, when it comes to Northwestern and their partnerships in the past, that's a big number.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it can cost a lot to get these drugs to market, up to $10 million to get a potential drug to the FDA for approval for clinical trials. And once approved, it's millions more to get drugs into the hands of patients. So, you know, $65 million, you may be talking five or six medications overall.
There's another story that caught my attention, basically because it's got all of my guests in it. This story about millennials and corporate philanthropy. The story quotes Tom Gimbel. It refers to StratX, and we've got the guys from StratX, Adam Oxtein, in here quite a bit. But tell me a little bit about how companies are attracting young workers by becoming philanthropic. I mean, that's a real draw now for young workers when they choose jobs.
That's absolutely right. And it's not only becoming philanthropic, but doing it in the right way, a way that feels authentic and connects with millennials. And as you and I often say, Steve, the rest of us as well. A lot of these things seem to make sense for a lot of generations,
right,
of workers. And this is a big part of our giving guide out this week. Really good read. I highly recommend it. But the recommendation now is that, you know, where charitable giving used to be the corporate suite, the senior execs deciding where to spend the money, now what's hot for millennials and what helps attract them is giving to nonprofits that employees support. So kind of a grassroots support And then, you know, continuing to connect employees to charities that match their interests with hands-on experiences. So, you know, maybe building a Habitat for Humanity.
Well, I was going to say, good news for the soup kitchen on the corner, because people want to keep it local. They want to see the benefit of their work or their contributions. Bad news for organizations like the United Way.
Yeah, I mean, potentially, unless, and how about this, those organizations see what millennials want and need and change some of the ways they do things so that maybe, you know, so maybe there's more engagement that United Way can offer to employers that then they can use to get their employees out in the field. So I think it's an evolution, probably what they call a market disruption, that's going to affect a lot of old line charities. And, you know, the smart ones will definitely come up with ways to, you know, be more than a receptacle for checks.
That's Frank Sennett. Read more at chicagobusiness.com. Frank, great to talk to you. I'll meet you in the Pedway.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing the news, providing input, and breaking down the stories that matter to the world of business. So if you had to guess which restaurant is the top grossing spot in the city, what would you say? Time's up. If you said Gibson's, you're right, but maybe not for long. The long-awaited restaurant and nightclub, Tao, is expected to open in September, and it's already making waves in the city's restaurant market. And it has the potential to dethrone the Chicago Steakhouse as the highest-grossing restaurant in Chicago. Tao is finishing up the construction soon in the former location of nightclub Excalibur, located on Dearborn in the Near North neighborhood. And speaking of changing of the old guard, the name Monsanto might be no more as of August. German pharmaceutical company Bayer is finishing up the purchase of the Midwest company, and they're looking to absorb the business and their name. For now, the purpose of the modern agriculture company will likely continue their business direction as usual, but under the name of Bayer. I mean, for $66 billion, I'd consider changing the name too. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It's 12:52 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in as we sit in the Allstate Showcase studio right along Michigan Avenue. In the studio is Cornelius Griggs. He is the president, the man behind GMA Construction, and just yesterday won the James Tyree Award. You know, Cornelius is in the studio almost as much as I am, though, so it's no big deal. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again. I appreciate it.
Tell me a little bit about first GMA Construction.
So GMA Construction Group is a general contractor, construction manager, and cost engineering firm. We focus our projects in affordable housing, healthcare, and education. And you can find us in the communities of Chicago, giving back to those communities and developing in those communities that are sometimes forgotten about.
We talked a lot about that when you were here before. We had each of the three finalists on before the big Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce dinner luncheon yesterday. So you were there. You were there with the other finalists.
Yes.
Did you expect to win?
I did not expect to win. I was completely shocked when they called my name, and it was but it was a great feeling to know that the work we're doing is finally being recognized.
Now, you gave a speech after that?
I did give a speech. I don't remember one word of it.
I love that. Because, you know, here you are. You're a very successful guy. I would think, I mean, $50,000 is a lot of money. It's a great
gift. It is a lot of money.
But I would also think that being in this position, I don't know if you're used to getting $50,000, but you're accustomed to needing to speak on the fly and things like that.
Yes. So it's, you know, speaking on the fly is something that I've done a lot of in my career, and whether it's in the classroom or in the office, it's something that we have to do. But the bigger piece is the award itself and what it means, you know, to our company to kind of carry on that legacy of Mr. Tyree.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point, because we keep, it's almost like we measure the award by the prize money, and that might not always be the best way to measure the prize.
Yeah, and that's not what we did here. For us, it was about the legacy of the award and us being able to give back to the community and take those funds that we're going to gain from this award and put them back in the communities that need them through our entrepreneurial opportunities, through the training and development of Chicago Public School students in that community, and all those good things.
So, tell me specifically, what are you going to do with the $50,000?
So we're kicking off our CREATE program with Chicago Public Schools, Austin Career Academy. Tomorrow we launch it. We're going to be bringing in summer interns, so we're going to be paying those interns $15 an hour to work in our office over the summer so they can learn construction management. So a good portion of it will go towards sponsoring that program over the next 3 years. And then we're also going to invest in technology for our people in our office to help us serve the communities in which we work in a lot better.
Tell me about the people who work for you, because from, and this goes back to our last conversation, or maybe our last couple, but I'm interested in the fact that you look at the buildings you're building, but you also look at the same time at the people you're building, and maybe one... Maybe the focus is equal.
It is. It is very much so. I think it's more so on the people. Our organization is built on developing people that are going to transform communities. So you'll find our office is staffed with people who live in the communities in which we work in. And that's very, very important to me, that whatever community I go in, especially those that I grew up in, that I take a few individuals from that community and give them an opportunity, not just on that project, but something long term.
So what's your competition when you're out there bidding on projects?
Our competition are, you know, across the board. I mean, we bid against some of the bigger guys like FH Passion, Walsh, Blenderman, McHugh, and then we find ourselves in a smaller market as well, where we bid against some of the other smaller firms. We have a really good advantage because I've worked in corporate America for so long,
right,
on the construction side, so I understand how to bid like a big guy, but also understand how to be competitive in the smaller market as well.
I was joking with Ben at Wake Night, the producer, before you came in, because I know you're in construction, right?
Yep.
Every time I see you, you are dressed to the nines. Where's the hard hat and the tool belt? What's that about?
You know, since the day I started in construction, I remember my very first job at Clark Construction, I showed up on day one with a shirt and tie on. And since that day, I've never really taken it off. So I think it's important that we always, you know, it's what people think of you when they see you is very important. And it's that first impression that you leave on them. So construction is a business, just like being in banking and in other areas. So my job now as a president is to go out and be able to garner a new business. So it's important that I look the part.
That is Cornelius Griggs, the president of GMA Construction. It's great to see you. Come back, right? Let's next time you get a project, you want to talk about something, let's have you back on.
That would be awesome. I want to take a moment to thank the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, CIBC, and Mesro Financial for giving us such a wonderful award yesterday. We are extremely excited about it.
Well, you had great competition, but I think the award was well-earned. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.